The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. It's sort of wrapping up the week. We had a very busy week, and I love the fact that we got to speak with the guest that we have on today at CrimeCon. So that's where this recording comes from. I hope everyone out there is doing wonderful. But Tim, really, seriously, how are you?
I am very happy to bring this interview to our audience today, and we're going to end up running this on both feeds. We spoke with David Robinson, who is the father of Daniel Robinson, and Daniel Robinson's been missing since June 23rd, 2021, out of Buckeye, Arizona. David and his team has really gotten out there with their social media reach, and you can find them on Twitter at PleaseHelpFind4. And it's, or you can just type in, please help find Daniel. And he's really amassed a large social media following, at least on Twitter anyway, in only about a year.
Social media following as well as an incredible boots on the ground effort. When you go to the website, pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, you can do everything there from donate to submit tips to volunteer with searching and organizational purposes. You can also sign the petition. You can also print up the flyer. And I think that's something that's been a little bit overlooked in David Robinson's search for his son, is that you can, wherever you are in the world, go to this website, print the flyer, and put it everywhere that you can. And he says how moved he is that he knows that people all over the country are finding these flyers underneath their windshield wipers or, you know, tacked to telephone poles and message boards. And when you look into Daniel's personality and what he was as a young man, you can see why David is so driven, not just because he's his son, but this is just a good human being. Daniel was a geologist. He had a bright future. He wanted to actually, like, make change happen, and just a good person overall. Just to go over some details here, like you said, just to repeat, he was last seen in Buckeye, Arizona on June 23rd of last year, and he was driving his 2017 blue-gray Jeep Renegade heading west into the desert terrain. He was working at the time, and on July 19th, almost a month later, that vehicle was found by a rancher a little over 2.5 miles from the work site that he had left from in a really remote part of the desert, and it was overturned. It was on its side. And the circumstances of this are extremely suspicious and mysterious. The vehicle was recovered. Some of Daniel's belongings were recovered, but Daniel has still not been found, and there hasn't been any real leads to figuring out where he is.
Right, and we don't get that deep into the case with David from CrimeCon. He emailed us a couple of days before the event, and we emailed him right back and scheduled a time to talk, but it's pretty hectic. I think about 5,000 people attended CrimeCon 2022 in Las Vegas, and at one point, the hallway is kind of emptied. And you can hear some background noise, but also we mentioned that we'll sort of pick this conversation back up with David at a later time in a more controlled environment. So if you've got any questions for David, please write them in the YouTube comments, put them on social media. We'll gather them and ask David next time.
It sort of felt like a preliminary interview before we do our regular interview. And I think that that was really important, probably not intentional on our part until about halfway through. Personally, I started to realize this is a good primer interview to the actual interview, because David is so driven, like laser focused, to find Daniel and using his military training to coordinate searches, to create maps with grids, to assign tasks to people like passing out flyers, managing the social media, managing the websites. So there's so much more to talk about with him. And he's got so much to say about it. And it felt good to talk to him, sort of like an icebreaker at CrimeCon. And he was gracious enough to stand with us there, especially when the sessions were letting out and people started to sort of crowd around and pass by. But we plugged through it. And he was a pro and a gentleman, despite all of the circumstances. And personally, I was impressed with the fact that he, in a short period of time, looked at the concept of CrimeCon and decided that that would be the best place to publicly broadcast his mission to find his son. He took time off from the actual search to do that because he saw the power of what that organization, that event can do, and the power of that community. So bravo to him for recognizing that. And if you were at CrimeCon and you know the story, it's now, I think, in a way, as it is for us, sort of your responsibility to help him. You know, you went to CrimeCon, you bought the ticket, you're an advocate. This is the next step. It just doesn't end when you leave CrimeCon.
And sharing helps. David wants this story out there as far and wide as possible. Also, donating helps if you can. You can go to pleasehelpfinddaniel.com and you can donate right there. Again, you can volunteer and you can check out the sector map. It's pretty impressive to look at and to see what ground has been covered already. And you can also sign the petition on the site, or you can print out a flyer and put that around town. Anything helps. So thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. Please retweet and share.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster, Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
We are here with David Robinson. How are you, David?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay. Doing the best I can.
It's a big step coming to this conference, and you're speaking. Can you tell us about your decision to come here and speak?
Yes. Well, the first thing is, I've been out there searching for my son since June 26th. He went missing on June 23rd last year. The main goal is to try to get his name out there, try to get his story out there. Things with story, well, getting his name out there in the story brings in everything I need, like from revenue to awareness. If somebody's out there that know what happened to my son, they may say something.
I don't even really know where to begin with this because it's one of those, we talk about missing people a lot. And we talk about ones that are, you know, you have cold cases that are 10 years, 15 years, 20 years old. This is not, this is just over 10 months. And every so often we get somebody who comes along who's just showing so much promise and just drive. I mean, your son, can you talk about your son? Can you talk about Daniel and what he did and everything? Like, boy, he was a geologist. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, Daniel, he's the youngest of his siblings. Daniel's a guy that loved to challenge his siblings ever since he's little, growing up. Once he decided to do something, he would do it. As you know, Daniel was born without a right hand, but that didn't stop him from anything. Like I said, hey, he challenges everything. He decided to go to college to become a geologist in his freshman year. He excelled at it. He graduated with honors. He came out to Arizona to pursue his dreams. He loved Arizona, of course. What geologist place for geologist?
Exactly where a geologist right. wants to be.
So he's enjoying that, the hiking, the nature, the things like that. Very much loving his family. Very family oriented. He comes out from Arizona back to home in South Carolina just to see his grandparents, even through this COVID time. Dan's that kind of guy that want to be around his family to see his grandparents, stand outside, but. This incident is very unfortunate because when my son went missing, it's unlike him. You know, Daniel would not just leave without telling his family. We're really close, so we already know what happens whenever he decides to go somewhere. He do love to travel, But he always tell us, you know, so this is very hard.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that is so frustrating about this is that you do hear stories about people who are missing and they were always in the habit of not telling people, like hikers and people who would, you know, maybe go on excursions. And it was so frustrating because they would never leave notes. They would not tell people. And that really hurt any search. But that was not Daniel. He was very communicative with his family. That's accurate, right?
That's right. Matter of fact, just 2 days before he went missing, me and my son, we have like our two-hour conversation. I already know it's going to happen, you know. One thing about Daniel, he's very inquisitive. So anytime he want to have answers and know what's going on, he calls me. He calls his mother, calls his siblings. So, yeah, we just have that tight-knit type deal, and it's no way Daniel will want to deal away from his family.
And every picture you see, he's always looking confident and look. He's got a smile. And I know, obviously, families aren't going to put pictures of their missing loved one, you know, looking upset. But
right,
I feel like just looking at him, I feel like it's not possible for somebody like him to even be in a bad mood. What was he like?
Well, Daniel, he's a very friendly guy. Very friendly guy. He's a founder, you know, at his fraternity in his school, the College of Charleston. He have tons of friends. You know, people that you talk to people about Daniel, they love him. Mm-hmm. Very people person. And like I say, very loving.
Yeah.
Just love people. He don't judge. He's very don't have a judgment about people. So that's, you know, you may say I'm a little biased, but I am. I'm supposed to be. I'm a father. But at the same time, yes, I know my son's his character.
Yeah.
And how old is he?
He's 25 now.
25. Okay, so he went to the College of Charleston and then moved out west.
He sure did. Landed his first job out there in Arizona, Phoenix.
Okay, doing geology?
Geology, that's right.
Very cool. Okay, tell us about what happened. How did he go missing?
Well, from the story I was told, there was one person at the well site. My son is a geologist, but he also got hired on as a field geologist, and also called a hydrogeologist. What he do is check the viability of the wells. You know, communities in Arizona have to have at least 100 years of water supply coming out of these wells. These wells have to be there. And so his job is to determine that and also to find out if the water is even drinkable, you know, the rock settlements, you know, type of rocks and things like that. But that one morning, he did two well sites. He started off at the first one. It's roughly around 7 o'clock in the morning. He made it to the second well site, they say around 9. He had a conversation with the other worker that was there. It's a worker from a company called Weber. And that worker said he pretty much had a 10-minute conversation with them. And after that, my son just waved off, drove, and never been seen again.
His car was found, though, right?
Right, almost 30 days later, about 3 miles away from that well site. It was crashed into a ravine. Everything on his body, from his underwear, socks, is on the ground in a pile.
Everything was what?
Everything from the ground. Everything that was on his body, from his underwear to his socks, was about 3 feet away from the vehicle on the ground there in the pile. The vehicle had two impressions in the windshield. His work lap top was inside the vehicle. His backpack and things like that. But his cell phone also was inside the vehicle. Two cases of water was still inside the vehicle, untouched. And so those are things that made it really suspicious about what happened.
And on this postcard,
that's the vehicle there. Yeah. Right. That's right. That's where it's found.
And it seems like a very dry area. It doesn't really make much sense for cases of water were in the car.
And, you know, it's 118 degrees, 120 degrees out there that time of the year. You'll think a person would take at least a bottle of water with them.
Okay. Can you tell us about the official investigation into his disappearance?
Well, as far as I know, there isn't no real investigation. Of course, as you may know or may not know, the vehicle was found on July the 19th by a rancher. The police department the next day turned the vehicle over to me. So I had a possession of the vehicle. I had a possession of everything you see at the scene. There was no investigation. So I started my own investigation ever since I came out here, out there in Arizona. I'm in Arizona all the time, so yeah. In my mind. But, you know, ever since I've been in Arizona, started my own investigation and hired my own PI to work that investigation also. We found a lot of things, like left additional miles on the vehicle after it been crashed. He's accident reconstruction, so he said, hey, the damage on the vehicle didn't match the terrain. There's red transfer paint on the passenger side. That's nothing red in the desert. So everything he found so far, is a lot more to that detail, but everything he found would suggest that the vehicle crashed somewhere else and was brought there. So that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you said you started your own investigation. If you don't mind, what do you do professionally, and how do you, as a father of a missing young man, train your brain to then think like an investigator and maybe even kind of detach from the personal relationship you have with the person missing?
Right. I had to put on many hats, you know, of course, yeah. You know, my investigator hat, keep my father hat on, and also my military hat, I call it. That's one of the things that I was able to do, you know, in the military, we're taught to never leave a battle buddy behind. This is my son.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to leave my son behind. So I want to make sure I'm out here in Arizona to search for him. At the same time, I know also through my military training, you have to take your emotions and put those aside. You got to keep that mission first, and my son became my mission. So I stayed sharp with that. That helped me keep going, keep stay sharp. And at the same time, because of that, you know, I'm a father. I put my father hat on. I need to know what happened to my son. When I feel like the law enforcement not going to do that, they fail at it, then I had to go find the answers myself.
Yeah. Well, you do an amazing job on social media. We've been following your journey on social media. How long have you been in Arizona searching?
Well, ever since the 26th of June. 26th of June, I came out to Arizona and been out there since and searching. The first thing I did when I got out was talk to the coworkers. I worked with the Buckeye Police Department and also talked to the last person that seen my son. You know, me personally as a father, mm-hmm. I had to look this guy in the eye, and he tell me that my son just drove off, wave and drove off, just disappeared and vanished, you know, thin air. I had to ask him. That's one of the first things I had to make sure I do. But from that point on, just follow the leads. A lot of tips was coming in. Hey, I think I've seen your son here. I think I've seen him there. Do a lot of traveling to try to follow those leads and see the credibility of them.
And one of the, I don't know if it was one of the latest articles that I read, talked about how there were two wells that you are hoping to look into. Have you looked into those, and can you describe those a bit?
Yes. Well, you know, of course, I'm telling you guys, I don't get no help from law enforcement. They don't come out to any of my searches. So I did roll out to his name is Chief Hall with the Buckeye Police Department. I did get his department to come out to do a search of those wells. Oh. They did. They came empty-handed, but they came out through the week. The equipment that they brought with them was some cameras that came to the surface of the water, that well. This one well. They didn't do both wells. They did one. Not the one my son was missing that, but the one that's north of that. But they came to the surface of the water, you know, and then pull it back out and say, hey, that's it. End of story. That was unacceptable to me. My investigation goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
So I had to make sure I get a company that was able to take cameras inside the well, down to the bottom, and I was able to do that. So I got those two wells, the one my son was missing too, and the one that's north of that place where he's missing. Then there was two more other wells there. We thought was wells all the time. Kind of found out their mines. I'm in the process right now to get BLM, it's Bureau of Land Management, authorization to go down in those mines to check those.
Do you find that you're pretty well received when you go to these organizations and you're asking for, you know, camera equipment or somebody to go in and search a mine? Are they receptive to what you need?
Well, the companies are.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to law enforcement, it kind of switches a little bit. You know, they work with you for a little while, and then after a while, you know, start kind of changing. So, like, just like BLM, Bureau of Land Management, they was very cooperative. Say, hey, look, this is where the mines are. When I started giving them coordinates and things, I found my son's vehicle was on federal land. They kind of shut down, hey, you know, you need to get your attorney to do this, or you need to get blah, 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 Buckeye to do that. So that type deal. But I'm just waiting right now. And I'm still trying to push and get these things done. The owners of the wells, I mean, to throw this in, owners of the well was even cooperative. They, you know, they get kind of weary a little bit. Hey, we want you out the well because of liabilities. So we had to provide, make sure we had insurance. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, I was able to get the companies that I had to go down in those wells to get them a free inspection. And that helped out. So that got me what I wanted. And at the same time, they got what they wanted.
Yeah. And
sometimes you have to work those out.
And I didn't even consider the fact that this is, you said it's federal property that the
federal
vehicle
property.
Was found on.
Right.
Because
right.
It's a national park.
I don't know if it's called a national park, but it's Bureau of Land Management.
Right. So that's all like federal,
right.
Federal property.
It is, right.
To add another frustrating layer to it.
It is. I talked to the FBI, of course. That's my whole main goal, is to get the FBI involved in my son's case. I went out there a couple of days ago and expressed that. So I'm going to see what happened from that point.
Good. How are the FBI as far as being receptive?
It's very difficult because, you know, I know the FBI comes in only if they're invited by the lead, I guess, department.
Jurisdiction.
Right, the jurisdiction type stuff. And one of the things is I can't definitely get Buckeye to do that for me. Lead, I did ask under request. I sent another letter. I was sending these letters out to the chief of police. One of the letters I had there was asking for the FBI based on the fact, you know, my searches. I've been doing this searches for over 30-some weeks now, and my searches have found human remains, human skull, human remains, bring closer to other people's family. That suggests to me that area where my son went missing is a crime scene. You know, hey, this is crime scene. Some of the stuff is on federal land. Y'all need to turn this case from a missing person to a possible criminal case. You know, I've been fighting for that. I mean, that's what I'm fighting for now, just constantly fighting for that.
I mean, you never expected that. That's
right.
You're finding other
right.
remains.
Right.
So something has to be accounted for there, too.
Right, right. And, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult. Yeah.
Wow.
How you think it messes with your mind, you know what I'm saying? My son is still missing. You know, one of the things is I had to, you know, go to GoFundMe to as help for the community. These are volunteers. These are normal, everyday people that's coming out there to help me out with them searches. One of the biggest part is now the searches used to be every week. Now they cut down to every other week. Now I had to put it on pause for now because of funding.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's very difficult as a father. You know, because I found a human remains out there, to imagine that that certain area that I didn't get searched yet, my son could be there lying on the ground just like we find those remains out there. So it's very difficult mentally.
What is your next step? I know you pause your search and you're here. You came here while you paused your search, with
yes.
which I feel like is incredible, to be honest, that you've decided to try a sort of a different tactic.
That's right.
At least, you know, temporarily. I'm sure you want to get back out there.
Yes.
What is it that will help you get back out there?
Well, first I want to say I am still going out there alone. Yeah. You know, I have days I don't announce the days I go for security reasons why, but I do go out there on the weekdays because I still have to keep my investigation going, still have to go search certain little areas on my own. I'm just one person though. But the step that I have now is because I've been doing this so long, I've run to other families, of course, who's supportive, but they tell me their stories. You know, you got other families out there, you'll never hear their names, never hear their stories. I'm passionate about that. I grow a passion about that. It's not just about my family and what we're going through. It's about other families, too. So I founded, I'm founder of the Daniel Robinson Foundation. We just got that signed in right now. Everything's coming up on that. So the goal of that is to also use that to help my searches for my son and at the same time help other families.
I was just going to say that. You have so quickly not only actively engaged in an investigation for your own personal tragedy, your own personal, you know, your son's missing, but you also saw almost immediately the need that this is for other people. And it's a need that no one really talks about because those people don't talk about it because no one's talked to them about it. An environment like this, people will talk about these things. And I think regardless of any outcome, what you've done with like training yourself to compartmentalize and say, here are my objectives, here are the hats I have to wear, I think that's huge for people who you're talking to who have missing loved ones, who can say like, okay, I didn't know how to approach it. It's been 10 years because I didn't know how to do it and it got overwhelming. I think you could really benefit a lot of people with, you know, you're speaking later on. You got to know how many people are going to take a lot of wisdom from what you say.
That's right. You know, and that's one of the biggest things. Like you said, just the whole fact that you are, you know, running to other families, like I said, that have those the same pain, same as that pain. One of the things that I learned for myself is you got to share that. Share what you know. You know, I didn't have anybody to say, hey, you know, you're not a professional. Nobody have a playbook to say, hey, look, this is what you do whenever you have a missing person. If you don't have law enforcement helping, or what do you do? And a lot of times you don't hear these families because they just don't know what to do. They don't know what the first step. They just relying and take step back and say, hey, I'm depending on you to help me, you know. So my goal is also with the foundations to make a playbook for the families that, so, hey, look, this is what you do. This is steps that I have done. You know, get your person's name out there. If the media drop your story, create your own story. Get a YouTube channel. Build yourself up. Or do something to put your person's name out there. That's the goal I'm doing. Just try to get people steps to take so they can get their person out there to be heard.
Well, it's really inspirational what you've done on the ground and so, you know, on social media. Do you have a GoFundMe for funding options for your foundation as well?
Well, the foundation, not just yet. Like I said, we just filed it 2 days ago. And so we're going to be working on that part of it. Of course, we still got to get our bylaws and things that taken care of. But, you know, for the efforts that I have been doing since I've been here, since June 20th in Arizona. I still say been here because my mind always tells me I'm still in Arizona. I've been here so long fighting for my son. But, you know, since I've been there, everything's been based on that. You know, I'm a retired Army guy, you know what I'm saying? And things been based on that. Being able to stay there in Arizona and get the equipment and things I need to do my searches properly.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I was going to ask how you can do it without working, I guess. Like, I imagine that must be insanely challenging.
It is. That's why I'm saying I'm relying on the generosity of ordinary citizens. And they have been champions. Everybody who come out to serve, they know. They're my family. I call them my extended family. You know, actually speak louder the words. People say anything all the time, but these people actually come out, literally, come out, I mean, out of their home. They don't have to, but they do that. They're my families. My families, and they always have my back.
We'd love to get you on the show in a more controlled environment. It looks like they just let out. They just let out an event. But before it gets too loud, I just want to say that your website is pleasehelpfinddaniel.com. You have Twitter at pleasehelpfind4, and that's a number 4. Instagram is please help find Daniel, and a tip line 844-602-0660.
And it's a paid tip line. I can throw this in. Paid tip line, pay that. You have live operators 24 hours, 7 days a week. Take their calls. You can be anonymous, non-anonymous. And if a person don't want to talk to anybody at all, they can text the word tip to that number, and you can still be anonymous.
Totally anonymous.
That's it.
Okay.
Have there been helpful tips that have come in so far?
Yeah. Matter of fact, just about 3 days ago now, there's a lead I'm following off a tip, off of my Twitter comment session. I didn't see it at the time, but I'll have that, and I'll turn that over to the police department. They say they're going to look into it, but I'm definitely looking into it. So, yes, it's been helpful.
Great.
Awesome. Well, I wish you the best in your lecture today and in your search.
Thank you.
And once this all calms down and we're all home and we're in front of our microphones, we'll invite you back on if you want to come on, and
yes, sir,
we can have a more detailed conversation and help get the word out there for
really
you and for Daniel and your family.
Yes,